WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at fairtoflare.com. I am Jason Mann, and joining me again today is Joe Drilling. Joe, how you doing?
I am fantastic, man. It has been too long since I have been on WrestleSpective Radio.
It has indeed. Well, I'm excited to have you on. We are continuing the Starrcade main event series, talking about Starrcade 1996, Hollywood Hulk Hogan taking on Rowdy Roddy Piper. And what Michael Buffer referred to as not just the match of the decade, but it may indeed be the match of the century.
Match of the century. That's right. That's right. Michael Buffer, as they paid him, you know, whatever it was, like $100,000 a shot or whatever it was that they paid him,
I hope it wasn't that much.
I feel like it was a lot. Like I've read somewhere that it was like an obscene amount of money. They could have paid many wrestlers for what they were paying him, but yeah. That was the nature of the Turner Empire, right? So,
sure.
Yeah, Michael Buffer, match of the century, and that's actually I watched it on the WWE's Essential Starrcade triple DVD set. For anybody who's listening to this series and doesn't have that DVD set, it's a good buy. It's got a lot of good stuff on it and an interesting history of the event itself with a lot of really cool interviews with the Crocketts. You've probably mentioned that already by this point at some point on this series. But yeah, match of the century, according to Michael Buffer. And it I don't know that I would say it delivered in those terms, but it's certainly you could tell when Eric Bischoff was actually involved in the booking. Which usually only meant at the main event level, because he had a knack for actually being able to kind of draw out a story and get a good build going into Starrcade especially. And I think that really comes through in 1997. But even in 1996, they did a really good job of, you know, the whole thing where Piper accuses Bischoff of being, you know, on the take with the NWO and all that stuff, that whole promo leading up to it. And then they all jump him and yeah, Bischoff says, yeah, I'm with them and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So they definitely had a good build going where, again, I'm not sure I would say match of the century, but the build up definitely made it a one not to miss, even though I did miss it at the time.
Right. Yeah. This was just before I really got right back into wrestling again. I mean, I was following it here or there, but I didn't. Yeah, I pretty much missed this. I knew Piper was back, but I didn't miss kind of the matches. It was really mid 97 when I was really paying close attention week to week. But I do think that WCW did something interesting in 96. Like in 94, 95, when Hogan comes in, WCW feels like kind of recycled WWF of like 90, 91 into 92. Mm-hmm. At this point, it feels much more like the classic, in this feud in particular, the classic 85, 86, 87, kind of the peak of the WWF boom, as opposed to kind of afterward. And I think what enabled that obviously was Hogan's turn becoming the bad guy and then making sort of the Piper and Savage feuds relevant, and also making sort of you have the positioning of the classic WWF battling the classic WCW, you know, with Sting and Flair and Luger and those guys on one side, Hogan, eventually Savage, and, you know, some of the WWF, and obviously Hall and Nash, although they were a later era. But, you know, I think those two dynamics kind of changed the character of WCW a lot, and obviously that led to extraordinary success and then even more extraordinary failure.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And this is sort of like, that's the first note that I made, actually, is that this match is sort of the anti-WrestleMania 1, although I guess it would be maybe more appropriate to say it's the anti-war to settle the score, I guess. But
sure.
You know, but it really is. It's essentially that match and, you know, they just reverse the roles. And that honestly made it fresh again.
Yes.
To have Piper in the babyface role and to have Hogan in the heel role. And you know, say what you will about Hogan. Things that I noticed about this match. This match, first of all, is way better than I remembered it being the last time I'd watched it.
Yeah.
Now, Hulk Hogan to me is like, he's like the Led Zeppelin of professional wrestling, right? Like, so you have to understand how I feel about Led Zeppelin, I guess, for that to make sense. So basically, like, when I hear Led Zeppelin, when I hear one Led Zeppelin song, I'm like, man, this is pretty awesome. This is kind of a jam. And then when I hear two Led Zeppelin songs, I'm like, is this a different song? Like, didn't we just hear this? And that is how I feel about Hulk Hogan. Like, if I sit down and I watch one Hulk Hogan match, I'm like, that was pretty great. And then if I watch another one, I'm like, I just watched this match.
Yes.
Yeah, well, and that's pretty much my feelings on Hogan. So just having just sat down and watched this match in a vacuum, having not sat down and watched any Hogan matches in the last, you know, however long it's been since I sat 6 months, probably since I watched a Hogan match, this match was pretty great.
Yeah. And well, I will say that I do think that Hogan as a villain and Hogan as a good guy, those are pretty different experiences.
They are, but in a way, he does the classic role either which way. You know what I mean? Like, he's the classic sort of prototypical babyface when he's a babyface, and he's the classic sort of prototypical heel when he's a heel. They get in the ring, you know, they're getting ready. The bell rings. Hogan backs into the corner. Very, very classic, really great, you know, sort of standard storytelling stuff there. Babyface right in the middle of the ring, you know, this is my ring. I'm the master and commander of the ring, and Hogan's in the corner. Then he bails out. Then when he comes back in, he tells Randy Anderson, get him back. I want to beat him in the middle of the ring, brother.
Right.
And
yeah.
Then he comes in, and even then he still doesn't go into the middle of the ring to face Piper though. You know, eventually he does move, they move towards each other and they lock up a little bit. But it's just really great classic villain, you know, every offensive bit of momentum that Hogan gets in this match is started with a cheat maneuver.
Right.
You know, it's very classic heel stuff. So in that way, it's similar to his, you know, Hogan as a babyface, because it is sort of the classic prototypical mold of that role. But yes, definitely in terms of the actual performance, very different seeing him as a babyface and as a villain, which is of course what revitalized him. You know, when the NWO formed, because everybody was boring, everybody was bored of, you know, the red and yellow.
Sure, sure. And I mean, Hogan is just so exuberant here. I mean, he's just so over the top. It looks like he's having a ball doing this. I mean, it's just so incredible to watch him just, I mean, even like playing the guitar, you know, on the spray painted belt, which, you know, Tony Schiavone is just aghast at, like, you know, you're taking this, you know, this prized treasure that has been part of this sport for a century in their canon and is, you know, and he's playing guitar with it and he's, you know, he's mocking it. But Hogan just seems like he's having so much fun, and his like over the top mannerisms and his fake threats on Piper. And mm-hmm. when they get in the corner, he's like, you know, watch him on the break. I don't trust this guy, you know, just stuff like that.
And then he slaps him. Watch Piper on the break. Watch him on the break. I don't trust him. As soon as they break, slap right across the face. And that's another great moment too. You know, right at the beginning of the match, he's trying to bait Piper into making a mistake. That's one of the old, you know, one of the old adages that I was taught when I was training to be a, you know, wrestler, when I was doing indies and stuff. And they, you know, my trainer told me, you know, the only way you can go from, you know, there's levels of selling, right? So there's dying is when you're all beaten up, you're about to lose the match. Because the only way you can go from dying back up to selling or back up to fresh is if someone slaps you. Because if you get slapped, you know, nobody likes to get slapped. It's an insult that fires you up. And Piper gets slapped and he doesn't take the bait. Hogan wants him to get sloppy. He wants him to get fired up and sloppy and rush in. And he slaps Piper and Piper just stares at him. Like,
that's
not going to work.
Yeah, exactly. And I love right after that, there's a flurry that sends Hogan reeling outside and Piper's like, okay, I want to go after him. But then he kind of realizes, okay, that's playing into Hogan's hand because there's DiBiase, Vincent, and Elizabeth out there with Hogan. Of course, the NWO is always kind of a threat to get involved. The rest of the guys, outsiders and so forth, are always supposed to get involved. So Piper's like, okay, I'm taking my time. I'm being tentative here. And it works because, you know, I hear a lot of people complain when there's like a big grudge feud, which this kind of was. I mean, it was more of like a long term, you know, these guys don't like each other thing as opposed to like a blood feud. But definitely I hear complaints when a match like this starts slow because it's like, oh, these guys hate each other. They should be going after each other. But you've got to think of it in terms of like, this guy also wants to win this fight. He doesn't want to do something stupid and get taken advantage of and lose. He may hate this guy, but he still wants to, you know, be the winner of the match. So, you know, and if you're obviously, if you rush into it too much, you're going to lose it. So I like that. Also, it's nice for like, this really did have like that big match feel. And that's a pretty cool feeling to have. And one thing I think that made this so fresh is because, I mean, they hadn't wrestled in 10 years.
Right.
Or maybe even 11 years. 10 years, whatever it was. You know, they hadn't, it had been a long time since they were opposed to each other. I mean, Pyro became a good guy in 86 and, you know, they'd been, you know, they weren't exactly buddies most of that time, but, you know, they occasionally were, at least on the same side, you know, in theory. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a whole new generation of fans had come along, although the NWO really brought that old generation back, you know, to a certain extent as well. So there's a lot at play there.
And you know, the interesting thing again is, you know, with the punching, even punching, like punching is technically against the rules, like, you know, and as part of that whole thing, you know, Hogan throws a punch at Piper before he, you know, this is before the spot where he bails. Mm-hmm. You know, Hogan throws the first punch, but he doesn't land the first punch. Piper lands the first punch.
Right.
You know, and you know, as you said, Hogan bails, and there's that whole thing. And I mean, it's just having turned it on its head, they have something fresh because, again, you know, they hadn't wrestled in 11 years, but they managed to. I mean, clearly they're dealing with two guys who understand telling a story, even though they themselves had not been in a ring. And did they have any tag matches or anything on like Nitro or Saturday Night leading up to this at this point?
I'm pretty sure they did not. I'm not even sure Piper wrestled before in WCW before this match. I don't think he had
Actually, I think you're right now that you mention that.
Yeah, because he was not in that long. I mean, I think he came in, you know, October, November-ish.
October, yeah.
Okay, did he come right after was it Halloween Havoc where he debuted right after the Savage loss?
Yeah, I think that's what I read. I'm going to double check that again, but I did a little bit of history research here, and I think that yes, it was at Halloween Havoc that he suddenly showed up, and everybody's like, oh hey,
it was the end of it. Yeah. So and he'd been, I mean. You know, of course, Piper had been in WWE on and off for his retirement was in 87, and then he came back in 89, and then basically every year or two came back for a program and then left for a long time, did movies or whatever. But he had been, you know, president of WWE, you know, through, I guess, the WrestleMania match, WrestleMania 12, the Goldust thing. So, I mean, it hadn't been that long since he'd been there. So it was, I mean, it wasn't the, it was another in a, you know, series of big jumps that kind of started with Hall and Nash of guys going over from one to the other. And, you know, and it kind of being a big deal, like, okay, this guy jumped from the other group. You know, that's a, you know, it was a little bit different from then. Okay. This guy just debuted. It's like, oh, okay. This guy, it kind of fueled the Monday Night Wars a lot, the big rivalry between, you know, WWF and WCW.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So for the record, he did first appear at Halloween Havoc in 1996.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Yeah. So, you know,
but again, even without them having wrestled together, you know, they still clicked very well right away. I mean, sure. I'm sure they talked it out quite a bit and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
I mean, this is the work of two guys who have known each other very well in terms of their work together and, you know, just match up together, know how to work this kind of a match and understand it. And just, you know, we'll get to it, I'm sure. But the only bit that really gets messed up is there's one weird like lockup out of a corner like later in the match. They're struggling. It looks like Piper's kind of going for an eye gouge, but then Hogan doesn't really sell it. It's momentarily awkward. And then there's the moment when the fan jumps in the ring, which obviously we'll get to that, you know, I'm sure in a few minutes. But that moment is awkward through no fault of the participants in the match, obviously,
because
fan jumped in the ring.
Sure.
So
I was gonna say that. I agree with that. That one spot was a little bit awkward. I think like DiBiase tried to trip Piper. It was kind of a weird thing. But anyway, when Piper was calming down early in the match, one funny thing he does, of course, he like picks up Randy Anderson and like sets him on the turnbuckle as he's sitting. Yeah. I guess to sort of the idea of preventing the count out and just sort of like, okay, I'm cool. Let's get him back in. Let's do this. So, we have, Hogan kind of starts working over once he gets back in, he works over Piper a little bit. And I do have to admire the chest rake and the back rake are not exactly like the most dangerous looking of holds, but I will have to say that Piper does an admirable job of making them look a little bit vicious. The selling there I enjoyed. And overall, like there are times in this match where the move execution isn't great. I mean, it's not fantastic. I mean, it's not, no. Your Daniel Bryan, Kurt Angle, those guys level, no, obviously. But
I think that's, that's
it should be expected. I mean, it is sort of like it is two older men fighting. It clearly is, but it's a really good fight. Like it's really energetic. It seems, real. It's just, as real as a Hogan match gets. I mean, it really, like they tell the story so well that, none of that other, none of the little flaws, the things you can nitpick at it really matter.
Yeah. Right. Right. And, and it's just not, I mean, that's not why there are people in the world who watch professional wrestling to see perfect execution of, exhibition type wrestling holds and perfect execution of gymnastic type moves from the top rope and that kind of thing.
Sure.
I'm not that guy. Right. I watch wrestling because I enjoy the storytelling. I like those things when they occur. But that's not a make or break thing for me. And in this match, nothing is so egregious,
that it makes you seem like, this is awful.
Nothing. None of it breaks my suspension of disbelief. And you and I are going to get together again in a few days here and talk about Starrcade 2000. And I have some issues with some of the maneuvers in that particular match. But, this match, none of that stuff, except for that, like I said, there's that one weird spot where it's like an eye gouge thing, but yeah. Then Hogan doesn't sell it, and I'm not really sure what was supposed to happen. It's just like, sure. There's like an awkward pause, they kind of look at each other, and they both bend over and like are kind of like blown up and breathing heavy,
yeah.
And they're obviously calling something got messed up, and they call something really quick, and then they get out of it. That's the only moment that I was really like, that was weird.
Yeah.
But other than that, I mean, it's just really solid... basic, to tell a good story, you don't need to do a lot of flashy stuff. And stuff as simple as, again, like I said, Hogan throws the first punch, but Piper lands the first punch. Hogan rakes the eyes early in the match. That frees Piper up to poke him in the eyes later without fear of the... Now, I mean, at this point, you're kind of at the point where we know who these guys are.
Yeah.
The crowd is going to cheer Piper no matter what he does, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, Piper could go outside the ring, grab a chair, and just hit Hogan in the head with it four times, and they would still cheer him because they hated Hogan,
yeah.
And they loved Piper. But yeah. Still, keeping in mind that sort of basic psychology of, the heel has to break the rules first before it's okay for the babyface to do it. And, that's really great storytelling. Piper doesn't go right to the eyes. Hogan goes to the eyes, then Piper goes to the eyes. And I love the way Piper goes to the eyes.
Yes.
He does it twice in this match, and he just has that super nonchalant, like, eye poke.
Right.
It's not an eye gouge like Savage. I love Savage's eye gouges, too, but it's not like an eye gouge. It's literally like a Three Stooges, like, eye poke.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's great.
And, you notice the first time it's one finger, the second time it's two fingers.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then other simple stuff, like right shortly after that, Piper gets Hogan in a headlock. Mm-hmm. It's a great spot. He's holding the headlock. Hogan goes for the classic backdrop out of the headlock, and Piper holds on to the headlock.
Yes, yes, that was great. That was great, yeah. That was the point where I'm thinking, like, wow, this match really is pretty darn good, because, going into it, I had the same feeling. I'm just kind of like, I know I've seen this before, but, it might have been one of those instances where I wasn't paying close attention. It's kind of like on and I'm doing other things and like I'm watching. It's like, oh, OK, Hogan, Piper, whatever. But really, yeah, the little things in this match really work very well.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so that's right before, and then I believe they brawl to the outside. Hogan bails, and then at that point, Piper is not about to let a count out occur.
Right.
Not that it matters because it was a non-title match, but we'll get to that too, I'm sure.
Sure, yes.
In a minute, but Piper's not about to let a count out go down. So even though he wasn't baited into going out earlier, at this point now he's going out to get him.
Yes.
He goes out to get him, and... there's this ridiculous moment where, I mean, it's a great moment in the match, but as far as the commentary goes, and I've always disliked three-man commentary teams, and I guess you can weigh in on this, you know, as far as how you feel. The three guys who are in commentary, like, I don't know why you need Dusty Rhodes here. Not that I don't love Dusty Rhodes, son of a plumber. Like, I do. But I just don't think there's a need for him on this commentary team. And, like, they're doing it on SmackDown now, and it makes me insane. Like, I just always am like, why is the third guy there? Like, you've got a play-by-play analyst, if you will. You've got a color guy. What's the third guy doing besides interrupting the two of them? Like, there's a banter kind of in place. And then there's a third guy who always seems like there's whoever the third guy is. Most of the time, he seems extraneous.
I'm going to disagree with you on this for two reasons. And in general, I agree that I think the two man commentary booth is almost always better than the three man commentary booth. But for two reasons, I always like Dusty and Heenan together for some reason. I always think that they're funny together. They have sort of a natural kind of a, you know, whether it's just a dichotomy of the two, they're kind of both a little bit from different worlds kind of thing.
Yeah.
I enjoy that. And you obviously can't really have the two of them without having play-by-play guy as well.
Right.
I also
notice I didn't question why Schiavone was there, although right. I can't stand Tony Schiavone on commentary post 1988.
Okay.
Like, after that, I just feel like he kind of stopped caring. And by this point, I feel like everything just seems put on. Like when Jim Ross gets really animated, it's like, by God, right in the heart. Like I'm like there with Jim Ross. I'm like, yes, tell me about it, Jim Ross. And when Schiavone does that, I'm like, you are acting and you're not good at it.
Okay. I feel like Tony, it was okay and sometimes good until the Nitro era. And then he still had his moments, but was generally not as good. Obviously, this is in the Nitro era, so
Jason, think about how many greatest, most important nights in our sport there were during that era.
Sure. He was definitely guilty of that sort of thing. There's no question about that. I didn't particularly mind him here, but I agree in general that he way declined at some point. Whether it's as early as you say or whether it's later or whatever, he definitely wasn't just like one point. There was obviously many points of it. But the other thing I think is good is I think sometimes I find Schiavone and Heenan a little bit uncomfortable together. Clearly they did not like each other. I mean, and sometimes like that actually worked well, but a lot of times it didn't. And I always kind of thought Dusty like balanced that a little bit to where it wasn't like the uncomfortable, I mean, we talk about like in modern commentary, Michael Cole, and Lawler or whatever, or Booker T or whoever, like you feel like whether they actually like them in person or not, it feels uncomfortable because Cole is so abrasive and so aggressive against the other ones where, when Tony or when, Jesse Ventura and Vince McMahon or Jesse Ventura and Gorilla or Bobby and Gorilla, they had it where you didn't feel that uncomfortableness because I'm not exactly sure how they did it, but it just wasn't as abrasive. It wasn't as aggressive. Like the two of them, they disagreed and they were, aghast with each other, but they seemed like, they sort of got along in a sense as well. Like they were at least courteous to each other. There wasn't the lack of courtesy like there is in some of these other ones.
Oh, well, the Cole thing, like I don't want to digress about this too much in terms of a conversation about commentary, but the Cole thing, the thing that happened to me with the Cole thing was it got to the point where I was listening to people bicker.
Right.
Like, and I don't want to spend 2 hours of my Monday night listening to people bicker.
Sure.
And, that just made me nuts. But I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine the other night, and I was like, who do you think is worse, Cole or Schiavone? Because neither one of us really like either one of those guys. And we kind of came to the conclusion that Cole is worse because even though Schiavone's worst is probably worse than Cole's worst by a matter of degrees, his best is also way better than Cole's best.
Yes, I will certainly agree with that.
That's where I fall in. But the moment that brought this whole tangent on was that there's a moment where Piper grabs the belt, not the title belt, but his belt.
Yes.
And starts whipping Hogan with it, like a rented mule, as Jim Ross might say if he were doing commentary on this match.
Sure.
But they digress into this weird ass debate about whose belt it is until Heenan finally chimes in and Heenan goes, who cares whose belt it is?
Yes.
But Dusty and Shivani have this conversation like, is that Hogan's belt? No, I think that's Piper's belt. No, I think it might be Hogan's belt. Like, and then as I'm thinking, who cares whose belt it is? There's the brain with who cares whose belt it is?
Yes.
And that was fantastic. That's also a great moment too, just because the crowd gets so behind Piper, just, you know, yeah, beating on Hogan and with that leather belt,
whipping him outside, you know, a bunch of times, and then they kind of go back and he kicks him for a little bit, and then he goes back and they, you know, go back in, and Hogan staggering in pain and just doing like the almost like the not quite the oh god Flair level of, you know, of pain, but definitely like a notch below that. I mean, it was very fun. That was definitely a highlight of the match. Before then, actually, I noticed that this is right after the spot where Piper maintains the headlock out of the Hogan suplex, is where Hogan's able to sort of ram, like he sort of gets Piper into the ropes and sort of rams him in the back, and then drops Piper's neck onto the rope. Piper takes sort of a nice little bump onto the floor from that. And so then after, you know, after they go outside and after the whipping, then DiBiase grabs Piper's foot and chases after him. And then Hogan gets in from behind, attacks him for a while outside. And then they go over the rail together, another kind of a little bit more of, you know, bumping than I would have expected. I mean, not that it's bigger, you know, it's fairly common professional wrestling, but for, you know, for these guys at the stage they were in, they gave a little bit more than I kind of my memory would have thought they would have given at this, you know, at this stage. So
one of the things, I mean, that's sort of the way that Hogan especially is remembered. If I take your meaning correctly, like that he was, you know, he was lazy and he was,
yeah,
you know, whatever. But yeah, I noticed that too. Actually, he takes a couple of really good flips over the top rope.
Right.
He does some really crisp bumps, you know, like, I mean, this is a guy who, and I mean, not to say that Hogan didn't eventually get extremely lazy, because he did. All you have to do is, if you do a YouTube search, listeners, go do a YouTube search for worst choke slam ever, and it will come up with, you, sounds like you already know what I'm talking about. It comes up with Undertaker choke slamming Hogan when he won the Undisputed title from him in, like, whatever, 2004 or whatever that was.
02, but yeah.
Or 02. And it, like, it really is the worst choke slam ever. Like, Hogan gets up like 3 inches off the ground and then like rolls backwards. Like, yeah. So he did eventually get extremely lazy, but
yeah,
you know, well, the thought was sort of that happened, that people remember it, that it happened way earlier than it did. And in this match, he's, you know, he's bumping his ass off. He was over the top rope. He takes all these licks from Piper in the belt and all. I mean, he's working his ass off out there. He's trying to get the whole thing over, and he's in the main event and he's jazzed about it. And he's having, like you said earlier, he's having a great time healing it up. And
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, and this is probably a 20-minute match, and it's really energetic. I mean, they barely, you know, there are a couple of holds of, you know, like when Piper's working the headlock, and then later Hogan gets a pretty good abdominal stretch. But I mean, it's not like they're like lazy chin locks or anything like that. I mean, they're really, you know, yeah, keeping it real. I would say that I think Hogan, you know, was hit or miss in the effort, just depending. I mean, like, there were times in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s where he would be lazy. I think the instance of the choke slam was more of a timing issue. I think they just botched it, as opposed to Hogan like not wanting to take it very well. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that, but I always kind of took that as like they just screwed up the timing of it, like Hogan didn't jump up or in time or whatever, they just messed that up. But regardless, I would say that Hogan's effort here for the time period is larger than his normal effort would be. But I don't think, I mean, you know, Hogan's a professional, was a professional wrestler for, you know, I mean, 20 years or more. I mean, he really, you know, I mean, the grind of that takes a lot out of you. I mean, I don't even like the worst professional wrestler, you know, still, you know, has to do more than, you know, I do in a normal day, you know, as far as effort, even if you, you know, don't do a whole lot. I mean, still, you know, any amount of professional wrestling, takes a lot out of you, I'd imagine. Oh, yeah. So, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess, and obviously you have experience with that, having wrestled and so forth.
Definitely, definitely. Oh yeah, no, there were many, many days in college when I went to class on Monday morning extremely sore.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
So, yeah, no, definitely 20 years that takes its toll, but I do still think that Hogan did get lazy.
Yeah, oh no question. I mean,
there comes a point where if you can't perform at a certain level anymore, maybe you should just hang up the tights.
Yeah, it's so getting back to the match, we have after they go out, they kind of, you know, Piper gets punched over the rail, then, you know, Hogan sends it back over the rail, then they get back in, and Hogan's like punching at Piper's hip, which they mentioned the hip replacement. They have a close up on the scar, which, you know, Piper is sort of like staggering, and, you know, it's sort of like his leg is tightened up, and he's trying, you know, like, I thought he really dealt with that well. And then after, like, Hogan gets a really good abdominal stretch in, like he like locks it in and everything. Like, he really, like, usually, like, the abdominal stretch is a pretty lazy move. Like, I remember, you know, Scott Hall doing it all the time, and he just and I guess maybe my thing with the abdominal stretch is like just Gorilla Monsoon hammering it into me, like how you have to execute the abdominal stretch. So when I see it not done well, I get a little mad about it.
I'll go with that.
Textbook. It really looks very good.
It does. I love the way they zoom in on that scar and they make it mean something. I mean, obviously he wouldn't get in the ring if he was in danger of being seriously injured from that, or a result of that, you know, hip surgery, but you still see that big gnarly scar and you go, man, those kicks have got to hurt. Like, that's gotta be bad. You know, that could be a serious injury, and Schiavone puts it over that way too, which is good on him, even though I still kind of hate him on commentary. But he does a good job of putting over that. You know, and they even, you know, they even talk about, you know, Bo Jackson had that same surgery and it put him out of the NFL.
Sure.
You know, and then there's more weird side dialogue with Dusty about it, but didn't put him out of the MLB. I guess.
Well, like, that's actually okay because. Because I like, you could make the argument that, like, mentioning the hip replacement, like, makes Piper seem old and seem like worn. And the idea is like, okay, Piper can still compete as an athlete here. It's not like he's past his prime. You know, it hinders him and it limits him. But, you know, there is that he can still go because A, he's tough, and B, you know, because he's still a great athlete. So I'm kind of okay with that. But it was sort of a random aside. I'll give you that.
Yeah. Right.
And Dusty was good for random asides. In fact, Dusty pretty much was random aside king.
His stock and trade was random asides.
Yeah, and being colorful, you know,
That's right, baby.
Exactly, yeah. So we have, after the abdominal stretch, Piper hip tosses out of it. DiBiase interferes again. I think this is the spot that we were talking about where it's a little bit awkward, and they end up kind of just brawling on the ground for a little bit. And I love, like, when Piper starts pulling Hogan's hair out, and Tony makes a big deal about that. And Heenan's line of "that shouldn't take long" is that's classic Heenan right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. No one's ever done that before.
Yes.
Yep. Is this where the schmoz starts? Is it shortly after?
Well, we get like a small package by Piper that gets to which I believe is the first attempt at a pin. Do a slugfest, and I noticed in this match they do a lot of the corner cam. Like, that was always kind of a WCW trademark where they would have, like, you know, they would do the up close on the turnbuckle and you would see them really close, and it was always a good shot. But they do that even more than I remember in a WCW match. I guess they spent a lot of time in the corner maybe, but I like that shot. That's a really, you know, good shot, and you get a lot of kind of more intimacy that, and WCW was really good about that. I mean, they got a lot of crap for their production work over the years, but that was one, but of course it did improve a lot during the Nitro era, but I thought that really, you know, gave you kind of an intimacy in some of the WCW matches that you didn't get in the WWE matches.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the corner cam, man, now that you mention that, now, like, I want more of that, because that was really great. You'd get a really good impact on that when someone did something in the corner, like the Stinger splash is probably the one that people think of the most. You do that big splash and you just get that really great, because the camera would shake. And, you know, you could hear the buckle, you know, rattle a little bit when it was hit, you know, and you know, you'd hear the wind rush out of the guy who took the hit. Because, you know, obviously, you know, when you take a hit like that, whether it's choreographed or not, you know, I mean, when a dude who weighs 250 pounds crashes into you, it's going to knock the wind out of you no matter what. And so you get that feeling of impact. And I guess Stinger Splash is one that comes to mind, but Bret Hart always took a great turnbuckle.
Right.
Like forever and ever, Bret Hart takes the greatest turnbuckle bumps of anybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, the corner cam would get those really well too. So yeah, those are always a welcome addition, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Then we build to, we have, right after the corner can, you can see they're definitely tiring out. They're slowing down. They're both at breath, but they're, you know, 17 minutes in this match. So it gives it kind of like that epic heavyweight feel fight. Like, you know, like almost like out of Rocky, mm-hmm. where like these two, you know, heavyweights have been battling and now they're just, you know, measuring their punches and trying to get their, you know, what they can do. Piper ends up ending it with a double thumb to the eye, as we talked about before. Follows it with a suplex, which, you know, given the size difference, they kind of make a big deal. Can he suplex this big man? It gets two with Hogan's feet on the ropes.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I had to mention that really quick because I actually noted that.
Yeah.
That is such a great pop for just a vertical suplex.
Right. Yeah.
Like, the announcers put it over, but the live audience can't hear the announcers. They just do it so well. Piper just does such a good job of selling how tired he is.
Yes.
That when he gets Hogan, who's obviously bigger than him, you know, up and over in that vertical suplex, the crowd just like, they like light up for that. It's not huge. I mean, it's not like, you know,
massive, but it's a big,
it's a big pop for a vertical suplex.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, and then there's really right after, I think, the part we're just getting to now, where Hogan misses the leg drop.
Right. Yeah. Well, first Piper misses a knee drop. Like he measures him and then misses the knee drop. And then, then Hogan says it's over and then he misses the leg drop. And from there.
Yeah. The Piper does really good. I think the live audience probably saw it better than we did, but I noticed behind Hogan as he's like talking to the crowd, you can see Piper like sit up, like he's sort of putting over that he's playing possum.
Oh, okay.
He kind of leans up and looks over and then lays back down. Not quite as animated as like an Eddie Guerrero, but still in a way that like I looked at it and I immediately was like, he's playing like I didn't watch the match long enough to know what was going to happen. But I was like, he's playing possum, like he's going to dodge the leg drop.
Okay.
And then he does. So I guess maybe the live audience could probably see that a little better, maybe he was just looking up to see if the next spot was going to be right, if he was in position. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into that, but
you're probably right. I missed that, but that kind of makes sense in context anyway.
But he misses the leg drop, and this is where things slightly fall apart because this is where Big Show comes down.
Right.
So now we've got DiBiase. Vincent / Virgil, Miss Elizabeth, and the Big Show all there.
Yes.
Big Show gets in the ring while the ref is turned by Hogan, but then a fan hops the guardrail. Apparently, from what I've read on the internet, and I don't see this at all, but allegedly the fan hit Ted DiBiase, supposedly, and then slides into the ring. And so Hogan and Randy Anderson team up and start kicking this fan like repeatedly. And then that leaves this really weird, awkward moment where like Big Show, who was like, what, probably 20 at the time or 21,
23 ish, I think.
But was he? Okay. He's young. Bit, he's still kind of green. Cause they kind of like, they're like, man, we've got the 7-foot guy. Let's get him out there. You know, is just holding Piper he could throw him down at any moment, but he's just kind of hanging out, like holding Piper aloft because there's this fan in the ring.
Right.
And Hogan and Anderson are stomping on this fan. And like, again, like you can't hold it against the performers because like, what else could Big Show have done short of just chokeslam Piper, which then throws the whole thing into a tailspin? Because if he chokeslams Piper, Piper has to sell the chokeslam.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I guess the best answer is have him get him close enough to bite your face earlier than you did.
Right, right. Which I thought they did okay. I mean, because honestly, I don't know if maybe the video I had didn't show it. Maybe they kind of cut it out or something. Because I obviously noticed that like he had it up in an extended period of time, but I either just missed the part with the fan or I wasn't paying attention to that side of the camera. It feels like something that would have been clear, but I completely or I completely did not notice that part. I noticed,
like, it was super clear in the video. Like, this dude dives into the ring, and like Hogan and Anderson just start like kicking him.
Okay,
like,
I remember it now that I remember that happened. Now that I think about it, but for whatever reason, I just missed it at that time. Maybe I was taking notes and wasn't watching it closely, But regardless, basically, as you said, Giant picks him up, tries the choke slam, but then Hogan's able to, or Pepper's able to bite him and then sort of clothesline him out. And then Pepper gets the sleeper hold and locks it in, and that's it. And he wins the match. Hogan fades, the hand goes down three times, and yeah, that's it. So,
and he wins it clean, but he doesn't win the title.
No, because WCW forgot to tell us that it was a non-title match. Apparently,
tell everybody, like, okay, this just blows my mind, and it taints the legacy of this match. Because as we just talked about, this match is actually very good.
Yeah.
And you know what? I get the dusty finish. Like, there are people who watch wrestling who immediately like roll their eyes and sigh anytime there's a dusty finish.
Yeah.
And I don't agree with that. I think there is definitely a time and a place for a dusty finish. At least try to make it make sense, though. Like, this was just the laziest, worst dusty finish in the history of professional wrestling. Because essentially the explanation is, it just wasn't for the belt. But, right. Like, they acted like it was on TV leading up to the event.
Yeah.
And, like, so you're telling me that, okay, so going, we're going to go full tilt with wrestling kayfabe and canon here, okay? You're telling me that Rowdy Roddy Piper was given a contract for a professional wrestling match, and either he or whoever represents him in the matter of signing these contracts did not look over the contract closely enough to notice that the match wasn't for the championship? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me? I'm supposed to believe, like, and just be like, ah, whatever. Like, it wasn't a title match after all.
Yeah.
And, like, the other thing that's a slap in the face to the audience is like, okay, this is WCW's WrestleMania, right? I mean, it predates WrestleMania even. It was the granddaddy of them all before WrestleMania was the granddaddy of them all. This is the event in professional wrestling, especially, you know, I mean, I grew up on WWF, so I always think of WrestleMania, but if you were a person from the South or a person who'd been following the NWA or following professional wrestling since that time, this is the event in professional wrestling. And you're telling me that the main event, the match of the century, Hogan versus Piper for the first time in 11 years, shoes on the other foot, oh my God, is not for the belt. Like, what do you mean that's not? And it just smacks of, like, it breaks the suspension of disbelief so badly, because on the one hand, you've got, like, okay, Piper didn't read the contract closely enough. Like, come on. And on the other hand, you immediately start to think Hogan used his political power and his contract creative control to just say he's not going to drop, like, to refuse to drop the belt to Piper. Which I don't know if that's what happened or not, but it certainly looks like it from where I'm standing. And, you know, again, the whole, it just taints the match, because the match is really good. In a vacuum, you watch this match and you're like, this is great. And the way that WWE edited it on the Starrcade DVD, you would just be led to believe, like, they don't even really, like, address that at all. Like, you're just like, you if you just watched it and didn't know the story, you'd just be like, oh, it wasn't for the title. Like,
right.
Whatever. Like, yeah. You wouldn't know that you didn't know that. Like, for a month before this match happened, that you were assuming that it was for the title until it wasn't.
Well, Dusty's even confused. It seems like he thinks Piper should win the title, be the champion. Like, but they kind of don't emphasize that heavily at all.
Did they even address this? Again, the version I watched was clipped to just basically include the match. And then, like, as soon as Piper's, like, hand is raised and his kid comes out, it's, like, fade to black. But, like, did they address that at all on this show, or was it not until Nitro the next night where they were like, yeah, sorry?
Yeah, they didn't do it on the show. What happens after that is Piper, well, the outsiders come out, Hall and Nash
that
come
I saw.
Out.
So, right. Yeah, so yeah, that yeah. I saw. That yeah. I'm sorry, we should probably talk about that. So Hall and Nash run down. Piper beats up the whole NWO single-handedly.
Basically, yes. He walks away. You get a little bit of him hugging his kid, and then he basically goes out of the frame. He's not seen again. you see Giant Big Show on, you know, in the rampway. He's mad. You're not really clear on the reasons why. He walks away. The Outsiders and Hogan get in his face. There's sort of an argument between them. It becomes clear that Giant is mad because the Outsiders didn't come in with him. Like, they didn't help him out. And Hogan is blaming Giant for the loss. He says he dropped the ball. And then you get Hogan carrying the belt and then Giant walking off. And then the other NWO guys posing in the ring and Hogan, like, doing kind of his normal pose down, right. Almost a babyface pose down. And,
right.
And a decent number of the fans cheering because, you know, the NWO was, you know, Perry was cheered more, but obviously there were people there who, you know, the NWO was sort of the cool heels kind of thing. So they had their fans.
Oh, yeah, there's so many people wearing NWO t-shirts in that audience.
Oh, yeah.
Like half the audience
probably,
is wearing.
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of them are cheering Piper, too, which they even point out. To the announcer
point that out.
But that's basically sort of the ending there. Yeah, they don't address the Piper thing there. They don't really even, like, talk about, like, oh, he didn't win the title. You know, it was just sort of like they just sort of – it's like, oh, well, that's it. You know,
maybe if we don't say anything, they won't notice.
Right, exactly. Now, I completely get what you're saying. And if I had been going into it and then watched the match and then at the end Piper wins, like, oh, he's not the champion, I would have been extremely angry. But, you know, 15 years later, watching it. It doesn't matter to me. It doesn't affect me because, like, oh, yeah, it's, you know, I don't have any emotion about how the title was treated in 1996. So it's, you know, that, so I can divorce it from that and just enjoy the match and not really feel like, you know, I was screwed over. I mean, I guess my suspension of disbelief explanation would be just that, you know, that Piper couldn't get a title match because Hogan either had the power not to allow it to happen, which I think NWO won that with winning the Fall Brawl, the winning the War Games.
Right.
So I think that was kind of part of the story, or because Piper wasn't yet a contender because he hadn't been WCW long enough, or, you know, whatever, he hadn't really won a match, you know, to enable himself to be a contender. So that would be
because
kind of,
these are things that you could address on television. Like,
right, right,
you know, it was clearly a bait and switch. Like, it was like, get excited for this match.
Yeah. There's no excuse for how WCW, like, not explaining it. You mean ahead of time, but that's obviously ridiculous. But I would say, like, if I were trying to explain it, like, rationalize it in my head from a storytelling purpose, not so much a how they promoted a purpose, that would be where I would get it. And I don't know what the explanation was the next night. I don't really have any, like I said, I wasn't watching then, so I should have checked that, but I don't. Check it now.
I'm just not sure either how that was. Honestly, I'm sure on Monday they were like, oh, it was a non-title match,
right?
And then I guess there was that was the Giant was out of the NWO, and then that became a thing, I guess.
Yeah, he was removed from it. I don't know if it was on Nitro, but it was removed later. So. Yeah, and of course, Piper and Hogan, they had two more matches in 97. They had a Super Bowl Brawl match for the title, and then they had the Age in the Cage, their infamous Halloween Havoc 97 match, which, I mean, was awful at the time. I'm sure that one I could not justify enjoying.
I was going to say, that one probably still is awful, but I haven't. But you know what? It's probably also not the worst thing that Halloween Havoc pay-per-view has produced.
I know. I would have to guarantee that it is not, as a matter
because of it is not the Chamber of Horrors match.
No, nor is it Hogan Warrior.
Nor is it Hogan Warrior. Oh, man. Halloween Havoc is like the worst. I used to think of Uncensored as being the really awful WCW pay-per-view.
Right.
Because that was the one that gave us the infamous First Blood cage match that ended on a pinfall.
Which actually, if you ignore that, is actually a pretty good match. But regardless.
But I think Halloween Havoc may take the cake in terms of. But speaking of the various WCW pay-per-views, I just have to mention this. And I've been listening to most of the episodes of this so far. But I haven't heard you mention it yet. And so maybe either you did mention it when I tuned out for a minute because I was listening at work or something. But do you think it's strange that when WWE bought WCW that they didn't start using the Starrcade name for their December pay-per-view?
I do think it's a little strange, yes. I and that has not been discussed. And that's a good point. I do kind of feel like that name still had some pretty strong value, especially when they brought back Great American Bash, which which is a good name. I always enjoyed that. I actually think Halloween Havoc would have been a great one to bring back.
Right. I don't even remember what paper, like, what was the name of the pay-per-view I watched like 3 weeks ago? It was a Hell in a Cell. Is that right? Was that?
No, TLC.
TLC. Okay. See, okay. This is my point, right? Like, I don't even remember. It was a gimmick pay-per-view and I still don't remember the name of it.
Right.
It was a good pay-per-view too. Like, it was a really good, you know, it was a good pay-per-view. I was very pleased with it. And I don't remember the name of it because WWE's non-Big Four pay-per-views don't have names that I ever remember.
Right.
Like, I don't see why they wouldn't have capitalized on that. And I understand that WCW wasn't doing great numbers and they went under, but like Starrcade, even now, like if next year WWE was like, you know, December 10th, Starrcade 2011 or 2012, I'd be like, sweet. Like, I'm on board. You know what I mean? Like, it just seems like a wasted opportunity to have another marquee, you know, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble style pay-per-view, or have, or at least present the illusion of that kind of magnitude just by using a name that had already had, you know, but they, you know, I mean, like Armageddon and Vengeance and,
right, yeah,
like, you know, random state of being verb slash, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, it's adjective, like WWE aggressive adjective pay-per-view, like, I don't care, like, that doesn't mean anything to me,
right?
You know, and I've been watching WWE my whole life and it still doesn't mean anything to me. Like, yeah. So I just don't see, that just doesn't make sense to me. Like, and Halloween Havoc, like you said, that's a great one too. The October pay-per-view, no idea what it's called. Like, I don't know what WWE's October pay-per-view is.
Yes, Hell in the Cell is one of them. I know that, but they changed a lot too. Yeah. They really have done a bad job. I mean, cause they've had monthly pay-per-views since, 95, 96, and they kind of stopped the In Your House thing, and they kind of, you know, for a while, they kind of had the same consistent ones every month since 98 or so. And then they obviously switched them around a lot, especially in the last 2 or 3 years. But they really did a bad job of building any equity in any of the shows other than the Big Four. Like, those still are the ones that, like, have – and maybe –
They even had equity in King of the Ring, and then they got rid of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. King of the Ring was another one that they had equity in. But, I mean, maybe, you know, kind of the Elimination Chamber show, that kind of has some, I think, you know, because I think that's kind of part of the build of WrestleMania. I think people like the Elimination Chamber matches, and there have been some memorable matches at that show. I think that one kind of has a little bit now. You know, maybe Money in the Bank might be getting there because the Money in the Bank shows are fun.
This year's, I think, lent it a lot of
– right.
Made a big push in that way, because this year's Money in the Bank, something major, major, major happened. And now people may associate it with that.
Yeah.
You know, plus, again, it's a cool thing. Like, I think WWE just – and again, we're like way digressing from our like original
Which
thing.
We
but
enjoy,
like,
so.
You know, but WWE seems to – be going in the direction of kind of ridiculous gimmick pay-per-views, which I don't really like. Like, I like the Royal Rumble.
Right.
And I like the Survivor Series, which now they only do like one, sometimes, you know, if you're lucky, two Survivor Series style matches.
Right.
But now it's like TLC, Hell in a Cell, you know, all of these, you know, Money in the Bank I'll accept because it's, you don't have to come up with a stupid reason to put these eight guys in a match because it's for a title shot. So that's all you need to do. But like, the problem they have now is like, okay, TLC. You have a pay-per-view where you essentially have to make the main event a TLC match, but what if you don't have a feud that has progressed to the point where these guys should be having a TLC match?
Right, and Hell in the Cell.
You just have one anyways, because that's the name of the pay-per-view. Like, no, that's stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think Hell in the Cell is the worst of those, because that one really, like, you can kind of justify it like a TLC match. Like, a couple of times they had them like in tag matches, and they felt like they didn't need necessarily be like feud enders, but you know, the Hell in the Cell really, you know, was kind of meant to be like, okay, this is the big blow off kind of thing, and it really devalued that. I don't know if the TLC ever really had the same kind of storytelling value. It was always kind of more of like exciting stunts, exciting, you know, this is an exciting match. This isn't necessarily like a match that ends a feud, so to speak.
Well, I think with tag teams, it's a little different. Like the TLC match, when it started as a tag team thing, because I mean, primarily for a long time, it was just only tag teams seem to have those matches.
Sure.
Then it's the thing where it's like, okay, we've got three teams or four teams or whatever, however many guys who want these titles, and like, we need to do something to take this to the next level. And of course it was convenient when it was created because, you know, the Hardy Boys jumped off of ladders and the Dudley Boys put people through tables and Edge and Christian hit people with chairs. So
right.
It worked out. But I think when you have a singles viewed kind of situation, like, it's like, no, this is a dangerous match. This could end somebody's career. Like, this should be a serious, like, if it's a singles match, I think this should be a serious thing. Like, this should be, not maybe to the extent of Hell in a Cell, because I definitely agree with that. Like, that's the worst. Like, being like, we need to have a Hell in a Cell match. Why? Just because? Like, no, you don't have a Hell in a Cell match just because. That's not okay. Like, it's because it devalues. Because then when you do have a blood feud of guys who've been feuding for, like, 6 months and you need a blow-off, now that option is off the table unless you happen to start the feud in such a way that it will end at that pay-per-view.
Right.
And, like, so you just take two guys who have had like two matches on TV together and like, oh, Hell in a Cell. Like, I don't care. I'm not invested in, you know, it's like the opposite of, you know, the Magnum TA, you know, Tully Blanchard cage match. Like, the reason that match was in a cage is because these guys wanted to rip each other apart. And like, that's what, you know, the first Hell in a Cell match was, you know, not only was it a serious feud between HBK and The Undertaker, but it was all the talk of Kane and like what would happen there. And then like the Undertaker Mankind thing, like they'd been feuding on and off for years, like
right.
literally years at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and that was supposed to be the end of it. And even like, you know, the Triple H Cactus Jack Hell in a Cell match, you know, even that was like, this is your career. Like, you have to beat me in this match or your career is over. I'm done feuding with you. You've been a thorn in my side for like 6 months. I'm over it. Like, you want another title shot. It's your career. We get in this dangerous match and like, we will tear each other apart. And you know, it's going to be the end, even though I think the street fight is a better match than the Hell in a Cell match. That match still has that, you know, gravitas attached to it, you know?
Sure.
And so I think you're right. Like, and that's my problem with a lot of the WWE pay-per-views now, is it's like Extreme Rules and, you know, all of these, like the Extreme Rules might be almost the worst because they go into the grab bag of all the gimmick matches and they're like, we'll have a stretcher match and we'll have a, you know, Falls Count Anywhere match and we'll have an Extreme Rules weapons match and we'll have a, you know, a Texas Death match or a Last Man Standing match, you know, and like now you've taken like 7 gimmick matches and just burned through them all for no reason, like just because.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry for ranting, but this is my problem with current WWE pay-per-views.
That's all right. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. It just seems kind of silly that they do that. But I think the larger point is, like, it seems weird that WWE, you know, those shows have been around for so long. I mean, and maybe because of the age that we are, that we're, you know, the shows that were the original Big Four just have so much more meaning because it's easier. I mean, I guess it's easier to remember what happened at Survivor Series 1992 when there were 4 shows in a year, as opposed to right. remembering what happened at Unforgiven 2004 when there were 14 shows, you know?
That's true. But even now, like, Survivor Series has been downplayed a little bit, but I still feel like Royal Rumble starts the road to WrestleMania. So you look at Royal Rumble and you go, this means something. Like, even the title match in this one, like, this, you know, this is a pay-per-view that birthed, you know, Bob Holly versus Brock Lesnar for the World Heavyweight Championship. You know, right. like, that doesn't matter. What matters is the Rumble.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be like, I mean, some years they kind of screw it up and they don't, like, they've shortened the times and they've done weird stuff. But, like, generally, you know, they're like, this is going to be like an hour to an hour and a half of 30 to 40 dudes, like, beating each other up to get a shot at the title at WrestleMania. Like,
sure.
this is a thing.
Yeah.
And then WrestleMania, obviously, is WrestleMania. And, you know, SummerSlam is... I feel like you and I briefly talked about this when we were talking about the SummerSlam main events. But I feel like that in a lot of ways, like, overall show quality of SummerSlam tends to be a little better than overall show quality of WrestleMania, even though the WrestleMania main events probably maybe a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But I think like quality of the shows overall, because SummerSlam doesn't have that weird, like, Super Bowl, like, pageantry. It's just like, this is our second biggest show of the year, and it's going to be a great wrestling show.
Right.
You know, so I think that, I don't know, I mean, you may be right, because obviously if I have the nostalgia-tinted glasses on, like, I can't see that I do. So right. It's very possible what you're saying is true, but I still feel like they still treat those four pay-per-views, maybe not so much Survivor Series, but at least the other three, they still treat them a step above the other 14 or whatever, however many pay-per-views they have now.
I agree, but I wonder if there are people who let's say are roughly 10 years younger than us, who are like, oh yeah, I totally know what happened. Like, No Mercy is like a show that means a lot to me, or meant a lot to me, because I know that it, you know, No Mercy 2003, this happened, or what, you know, who have that sort of equity that we don't have for what, because of our ages, or because of how what we grew up with, or whatever. Maybe there are those people who are really just really super, like, oh, I love the Hell in the Cell show because I get all these Hell in the Cell matches and they're great. You know what I mean? I completely agree. I'm not completely on your side of it. I just wonder if there are these people out there who, you know, feel differently about it, who, you know, just, you know, who it means a lot to them for whatever reason, and it may or may not, I have no idea, but I'm just sort of would be interested in somebody who's really excited. Oh yeah, Extreme Rules. I remember what happened at Extreme Rules 4 years ago. That was so great. And, you know, and so forth. I mean, who knows if anyone has those feelings and wants to, you know, have a discussion with us, yes. You know, you can get with me at twitter.com/retrospective, and you're also on Twitter as well, of course.
I am. You can get with me at twitter.com/shake_well. You can follow my obnoxious website at twitter.com/onthestick, which, of course, you can find that particular website at onthestick.com.
Yes.
But you won't find a lot of wrestling content there, because those guys usually roll their eyes at me when I want to do wrestling stuff. So that's why I do stuff here with you guys instead, with Fair to Flair.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Well, we always enjoy your contributions as well. Right. So anything else about the match? We already did the plug segue, but
that's right.
I didn't actually ask.
I thought that was just forceful. I thought you were just trying to guide it toward. I thought we were reaching an end there, and that's.
It just felt natural to do that. So.
No, I think. I mean, again, I think the match is great. It's it's readily available. It's on the Starcade set that I have. I think it's also on. I don't know if my microphone cord is long enough for me to reach and check if it's it's on the internet, right? So like, if you're verify that
yes.
If you're wanting to go that direction, you can always do that. I think it's on the Hogan Anthology. Let me see here. No, not there.
WWE would have
That's weird. It is not on the Hulk Hogan Ultimate Anthology 3-disc collection. Which, mine came with a disc full of Hogan Knows Best episodes. Why would I want that? That was just a bonus, I guess.
Yeah.
It was included. But,
I remember, there was another disc of it where it actually had good
had
stuff.
Matches. That was the one I wanted, and somehow I ended up with the Hogan Knows Best.
That's very silly.
I don't know what happened there. Maybe the Roddy Piper set has this match on it, too, which, I mean...
Now you've made me curious, and so now I'm
looking
to find out. Yeah,
I'm looking.
I'm gonna find it first. let's see.
Like Starcade 83, Starcade 80. Yes, it is. It's on.
It is the last
match.
Born to Controversy on the Roddy Piper. Yep.
On the Born to Controversy.
We found it at the same time.
There you go. So it's readily available in numerous forms. I would really like, you know, I wish that WWE would do more with the WCW pay-per-view stuff. Because, I mean, I've got the ugliest box set in the universe, which is the SummerSlam Anthology box set that looks like a cooler. That is hideous.
Yes.
And I've got the WrestleMania one, and I've got the Royal Rumble one. And I really, like, I don't know why. I feel like it's a license to print money if they would put out, like, a complete Starcade, you know, box set. Like, I would buy that in a second.
Yeah.
You know, for whatever, $150 or whatever ludicrous amount of money they would charge for it. You know,
sure.
I just feel like they have... They could do that and the Great American Bash and stuff like that, and put those full events out on DVD, and people would buy it. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I've got my, you know, wrestling fan tinted glasses on, and I'm the one who would buy that. Nobody else would, but I wish they would do more with that stuff. And I guess I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that the WWE Network does some good, you know, shows some of those old WCW pay-per-views.
Oh, that'd be great. I mean, if they show like marathons too. I mean, or if they showed like pay-per-views by year, like if they showed like all like the, you know, spent like a couple of days showing all the 1996 pay-per-views, like in showing them like all three companies too.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be.
I'm so excited for that channel. Also, yeah. WWE, if anybody from WWE is listening to this, I am a trained actor and I am available for hosting duties. If you need anyone for WWE Network, I'm available for that job.
So. All right. Well, I heartily endorse your you as well. So, if you need a reference, I'll do that. So,
awesome.
All right. Well, thanks again for being on the show. Another great discussion. And thanks everyone for listening. And we will be back with you again later.